It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Head of the pack, all the way in, slam dunk. Wow.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
It's hour number two on a Friday, final hour of the week of the show. We've got a high noon showdown for the ages on tap. I got a feeling we got Dean, we got Jeff on the line, set to go head-to-head for a big, beefy prize pack. The envelope will be stuffed full, including some certificates, some ticket vouchers for Catfish Bay Water Ski Park going on through the rest of the summer here. A lot of fun out and about north end of town, including also a $25 gift certificate to the Dive. Great burger place, great chicken appetizers, tots, and so much more at the Dive. You should check them out here in town. That is the Dive. The High Noon Showdown. We got Dean. We got Jeff. Dean is up first on list letter B as we are ready to rumble in this week's edition of the High Noon Showdown.
That's two, that's far, shooter.
Oh, you can count. Good for you.
And you can count on me waiting for you in the parking lot.
Doesn't have to be a fight in the parking lot. Although we'd love to see that, actually.
It's time to duke it out in this week's edition of the High Noon Showdown.
All right, the High Noon Showdown. We got Jeff awaiting on list A. We got Dean up to bat at the plate on list B. Dean, you got to know your football on this show, and that's what we're going to generally be talking about today. Your first question, just a jersey number for Chicago Bears, the wannabe Iceman, Caleb Williams. What jersey number does he wear, Dean?
Oh, Caleb Williams, is it, God, I shouldn't know this, but I'm going to guess 15.
Oh, 15. He wears number 18, Dean. So, Jeff, let's see if you can respond. The future Hall of Fame quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, Jordan Love. Give me a jersey number for the future gold jacket wearer.
10.
Ding, ding, ding. Jeff, I knew I liked you. Over to your second question. You just got to tell me what college this NFC North star went to. Amon-Ra St. Brown, the wide receiver of the Detroit Lions. Where did he play college football?
University, I believe, Southern California.
Southern California. Jeff, you're on your A game. Dean, you got to respond. Get this one right to continue with the knockout here. Andrew Van Ginkel. He went to three different colleges. Give me one of them here for you, Dean.
Iowa.
Oh, I would like to say that's correct, but it's plain and simply not. He was not a Hawkeye. He was an Iowa Western Reaver, was a USD Coyote, and finished at the University of Wisconsin. Andrew Van Ginkel. Jeff, my friend, very impressive stuff. Congratulations. I got the prize pack. You know where to find us. Job well done.
Thank you.
All right, Jeff, our big winner over Dean. Just to see if we can finish the job here, let's poll the listeners. I'm going to get you guys these final questions. I work hard to put these together, so we'll get them out here real quick. The LA Dodgers won the National League last season with an NLCS win over what team? I'll give you a second. The LA Dodgers won the National League last season with an NLCS win over what team? That would be a sweep of the Milwaukee Brewers. On the other side, the Blue Jays won the American League last year with an ALCS win over what team? ALCS. Blue Jays over Cal Raleigh and the Seattle Mariners. Those were the final two questions. Your tiebreaker, love these things. NBA basketballs generally weigh right around 22 ounces. How much does a World Cup soccer ball usually weigh? The answer is obviously a little less. If you ever held a basketball or a soccer ball, you know soccer is a little bit lighter, more kickable. Feel like you'd break your ankle kicking a basketball around. Basketballs are 22 ounces. How much does a World Cup soccer ball usually weigh? According to the Google machine, 14 to 16. So we had it right at 15 ounces for a World Cup Soccer ball. There you go. Jeff, our champion. Jeff, how's it feel entering the weekend as a champ? Ought to be pretty good in this early July edition of the High Noon Showdown. Still to come on today's show, NFL college football talk. Big 12 preseason team is out and Iowa State left out. Maybe not that surprising, but a little surprising. Usually they throw you a carrot or two. There's still some really good players on that squad, players transferring in from Washington State and other places with Coach Jimmy Rogers. But a lot of the big names out of the program, Abu Sama at running back, Rocco Becht at quarterback, out of town at Iowa State. Several other people transferring to Penn State, Iowa State East, if you will, now under Coach Matt Campbell. Not a single Cyclone on the Big 12 preseason, all Big 12 team. We'll also take a look and talk about Tucker Kraft. I told you yesterday, we're going to fire up the debate cannons on Tucker Kraft. I told you, I think he's right around a top five tight end in the National Football League. They ranked him up 1 to 10, had some honorable mentions in there. Where does Tucker Kraft slot in? I don't have much of a problem with where they put him. We'll introduce you to the top 10 tight ends in the National Football League, which is very youthful, including a Bear youngster, a Colt youngster, and more on the way. Top tight ends in the NFL up for debate coming up in the middle of the hour. And we wrap up the show talking USD Coyotes with Timothy Rosario of FCS Football Central, who has put in the work to preview the Yotes coming up this season. Head coach commentary, quarterback, receiver, hog mollies, defense, and so much more for USD. And do they have a realistic shot of taking the MVFC this year? We talked earlier this week with his counterpart, Zach McKinnell, who did the Jackrabbit football preview, and he noticeably, not to take pot shots, but did say, you know, I'm not so sure USD's in the conversation, but I like Illinois State. I like Southern Illinois. I like UND. I like SDSU. And there was no mention of USD. And that should miff a lot of Yote fans out there. We'll get a more Yote-centered conversation coming up at the end of the show with Timothy Rosario of FCS Football Central coming up right about 30 minutes from now. On to your scorecard. Major League Baseball. Mets beat the Royals yesterday 7-3. Cubbies lost in Baltimore 3-2. Minnesota Twins certainly had their moment as they were looking for a sweep of the Guardians.
2-0 breaking ball hit high in the air. This has some carry to deep left field for Royce, and that ball is not coming home. Into the Treasure Island home run deck for a home run, and here come the Twins. Royce Lewis clobbers the first Twins home run of the series, and it's a 4-2 ball game.
So Minnesota would end up losing yesterday, losing the first game of the series against the Guardians 5-2. 46-48, the new record. Yesterday, notably, was the return to the mound for veteran pitcher Bailey Ober. 5 innings of work, 5 strikeouts, 1 walk, 1 earned run allowed. Here's the veteran on how he felt yesterday.
Yeah, I felt good to be back out there on the mound competing against a division rival. Thought we played a good game today. Their arms looked pretty good and held us in check offensively, but just one pitch that kind of backed up on me that Arias got a good swing on. But overall, I felt like I was able to mix and keep them off balance. It's been sweeper felt really good today. Locating the fastball felt really good today.
And that's Bailey Ober again. 5 innings, 5 strikeouts, 1 walk, 1 earned run. Here's Twins manager Derek Shelton. Overall takeaways on the series, another series win for Minnesota.
Yeah, I think this team has shown, our club has shown over the course of the first 90 games or whatever it is, that, you know, they're always in games. They continue to battle. Today we just got pitched to. I mean, last night I think was a testament. We've continued to do it all year long. It's just today we got in a situation where you see why the Guardians win. That's their recipe. They go starting pitching to those two guys at the end.
That's Twins manager Derek Shelton. Other notable finals on the scorecard yesterday, Major League Baseball. Boston beat the White Sox 2-1. Detroit edges the A's 4-1, and Milwaukee wins against St. Louis 8-4 on the road. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, Brewers at Padres, Phillies at Tigers, Orioles home to the Royals, Cubs at Reds, Guardians at Marlins, A's at White Sox, Angels and Twins open a series at Target Field, 7:10 the start, 6:30 is your pregame coverage right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Other matchups tonight in the latter half of the slate, Braves at Cardinals, 7:15, the nightcap, Rockies at the Giants, a 9:15 go time. There are a lot of debates, a lot of opinions out there on the current state of Major League Baseball. You could argue a lot of different ways that the sport is better than it was five, six, 7 years ago. That's probably a matter of fact, at least more entertaining than it was. But what is not entertaining, what is not cool lately, is the way we treat pitchers, the way we baby pitchers, especially when they're working on really strong performances. One hitters, no hitters, perfect games. Jeff Passan talking about why teams are babying pitchers and how it's become so rampant in Major League Baseball.
Yuri Perez, who is the first one to have this happen, was coming off an injury and is in his first full season after Tommy John surgery. Jared Jones, the other one, is coming off of Tommy John surgery. So another young arm who teams are trying to, I'll use the word, they baby him. And they baby him because of the injury history. I get it, but I don't like it. Because here's the reality. We still don't know what causes arm injuries.
There you go. Jeff Passan talking about the current state of Major League Baseball. Got to be conservative. The arm injuries are rampant. The load management. It's all an asset-based game. You got different players out there. You want to keep them in and effective as much as possible. You don't want to wear them out. You don't want to injure these players, certainly, especially when they're coming back from an injury. Makes a lot of sense, but certainly leaves the fans feeling and wanting for more. When you pull people that are in the midst of a perfect game or no hitter or one hitter, great performance, and then you pull them out of the game in the name of analytics and being careful. That's all for Major League Baseball for now. WNBA basketball, Indiana scored a win, a redemptive one against Phoenix, 92-89 last night. No Caitlin Clark, Kelsey Mitchell had 29, and Vegas beat Portland 88-80. Asia Wilson a double-double, and with that win, Becky Hammon clinched her spot as one of two coaches in the WNBA All-Star festivities coming up later on this month. The other coach is the coach of the Lynx, Cheryl Reeve. In the NBA, a lot of drama surrounding a trade that has been on the books, not really, for 11 days. That is Kawhi Leonard back to Toronto. Did the Raptors know about the investigation, the repercussions, ramifications, whatever you want to call them? How much did the Raptors know, and what's going on the latest in the situation? Here's Brian Windhorst.
They contacted the league office and asked about this scenario. And the league office said two things that are important to realize. One, they would not block or stop a Kawhi Leonard trade. However, if there was a trade, the Raptors or whoever team acquired Kawhi Leonard would have to deal with any penalties that he was given as a result of this investigation. So this development is not new. What I suspect the Raptors and Clippers did here, especially after hearing from Adam Silver at the finals that it was getting time to wrap up the investigation, is that they believed that the investigation would be wrapped up by now. The Clippers have maintained their innocence since the start, and so they went ahead with it thinking that by mid-July it would be done. It's mid-July and it's not done. And so the Raptors, you know, they've been negotiating with Kawhi Leonard on a contract extension. Kawhi Leonard came to Toronto, took and passed his physical, was there posing for photos this week when Kyle Lowry retired and the team announced his number was being retired. But they hadn't done the deal yet. And so the Raptors had to take this step because people across the league were wondering just what the hell was going on.
There you go, Brian Windhorst, the latest there on that scenario. That is pretty darn ugly. We'll see about the results of an investigation. Evan Cohen saying the quiet part out loud here. Why didn't the NBA just step in and stop the trade altogether until this investigation was complete?
What this is telling you is Kawhi Leonard may be penalized through this. And that's why I said they don't have to wait for the investigation to end. They could say, we don't care, we want him anyway, which would be unbelievably ignorant. What Shams is telling you and what the Clippers and Raptors are telling you is it's not just the Clippers, it's Kawhi. And what I don't understand is why did the NBA allow this to happen in the first place? Why didn't they just tell the Clippers you cannot deal Kawhi Leonard until the investigation is over? Why are we doing this?
It feels pretty darn weird, frankly. Somebody pending a suspension, major fine, contract issues, etc. And we're putting him on the move already, but it's not officially official until it is, and it's nowhere near that right now, pending an investigation in the NBA. Lastly here, LeBron James is reportedly taking voice memos in regards to, hey, come on over to Philadelphia. We got cheesesteaks. We got this. We got that. This player, that player, everything. It's the land of your dreams. That's what's going on. That's a matter of fact. Voice memos, not conversations, not text messages. little pitches from general managers, head coaches, etc. in the NBA. That is a matter of fact. That story at ESPN.com. Just how ridiculous is this? Here's Chris Canty.
This is somewhere between odd and disrespectful for me. Because the normal course of business would be, hey, I'm speaking to the agent or I'm speaking to the player, at least sending a text message. This sounds like someone wanting an ex to leave a message on the answer machine begging for forgiveness and to take them back. Like, this just seems really weird. Like, I want you to sit at the kiddies table and just wait for me to come deal with you. I want you to want me so much that I want to hear you beg. Like, this just seems really strange to do business this way.
Absolutely does. Spot on there from Chris Canty. Over to the National Football League. Training camp opens later on this month. Already excited for that. Hall of Fame game less than a month away and getting closer by the day. Hall of Fame game Thursday, August the 6th. It's the Panthers, sponsored by Luke Kuechly, and the Cardinals, sponsored by Larry Fitzgerald. Two guys getting in to the Hall of Fame that weekend. 7 o'clock on NBC. Preseason week one, Lions will be in Cincinnati. Packers will be at the Steelers. Broncos will be in Atlanta against the Falcons. And on Saturday, August 15th, Vikings at Giants, Browns at Bears, Rams at the Chiefs. Talk about those Cincinnati Bengals. We have been forecasting. We have been maybe blowtorching the seat of Zach Taylor lately as the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals. How hot is his seat this year, especially if things come a bit unglued again in Cincinnati? Emmett Golden says this seat's pretty cool.
I'll say this about Zach Taylor. He's on the hot seat from us, the media. But, man, and one thing I know about that Brown family, the owners, they do not pay coaches to sit at home. And he's got one more year left on his contract after this one. So his seat is hot from us. But I don't know if the Bengals would ever fire a head coach, you know, with time left on his contract.
Look, if Joe Burrow wants him out, guess what?
Yeah, I believe it. When, as you say, I'll be late to that party.
Yeah, I'll be late to that party. I respect that.
My man Marvin Lewis should have been fired 3 years before he got fired. And they're like, uh-uh, we're not paying you to sit at home. So you guys make some good points, but I'll be late to that party.
And that's a real-life narrative. Cincinnati too cheap to fire coaches when they should be fired. We'll see about Zach Taylor. A lot of people forecasting either a season in which the Bengals come unglued, miss the playoffs again and underachieve, or there's some people out there saying they're going to win this division. They're going to go on a deep run in the AFC, and they will be challenging the Patriots and the Chiefs and many other heavy hitters in the AFC, Broncos, Ravens, and others, for that top spot and a berth in the next Super Bowl. Over to the world of golf, the Genesis Scottish Open continuing through Sunday. The Open will be next weekend, and at Wimbledon, women's final is set for tomorrow morning. Karolina Mukova will meet Linda Noskova, 10 o'clock a.m. Men's semifinals so far today have been not absurdly competitive. First one of the day, Alexander Zverev picked up a 7-6, 6-2, 6-4 straight set win over fan favorite Britain native Arthur Ferry. The fairy tale, if you will, came to a close this morning. And in the other matchup right now, party's not over yet, but Jannik Sinner has got Djokovic up against the rope. 6-4, 6-4, and in set three, potentially decisive set three, Sinner up a break early, 3-1. Joker with the serve right now on ESPN TV. The men's final featuring Alexander Zverev and likely Jannik Sinner will be Sunday morning. In the World Cup on the scorecard, France beat Morocco yesterday 2-0. This afternoon at 2 o'clock on Fox, we'll see Spain take on Belgium. And on Saturday, Norway meets England 4 o'clock. Argentina, Switzerland at 8 o'clock. And that concludes your scorecard in hour number two. Well, big news for the University of Sioux Falls Athletics Department, especially if you got young kiddos that want to go see the coup in action. The Cougar Club, the Junior Cougar Club, registration is now open. Official youth fan club for Cougar athletics in eighth grade or under. It's presented by Buffalo Wild Wings. Junior Club is completely free. Offers young fans an all-access experience throughout the year. New for the season, every registered member will receive the official Cougar Pack mailed directly to their home. It includes a USF Cougars pennant, Cougar sunglasses, Cougar stickers, a lanyard, and a Junior Cougar Club membership credential. They're available in limited quantities, will be distributed on a first-come, first-served basis, and they offer free admission to all regular season USF Cougar home athletic events and so much more, including VIP opportunities and a special birthday message. Get on that sooner than later. USFCougars.com. Adam Vinatieri going to don a gold jacket next month in Canton. He's also going to have his name in the Indianapolis Colts Ring of Honor. As of yesterday, Vinatieri will become the 21st person associated with the Indianapolis Colts franchise to receive that distinction. He'll be honored in mid-October, the 18th, during a game at home against the Tennessee Titans. Of course, Vinatieri, a Patriot, then a Colt, tremendous throughout. He's not yet a Patriot Hall of Famer. Maybe someday. But it will be an Indianapolis Colts Ring of Honor member and a Pro Football Hall of Famer before the year is over. And lastly, the big news from the world of college athletics, especially in our neck of the woods this morning, is that more changes on the way in Ames, Iowa. Iowa State Athletic Director Jamie Pollard, the longest tenured active AD among the Power Four, announced today that he plans to retire as soon as next year. Pollard, who has led the Cyclones for 21 years, plans to retire effective June 30th of 2027 or when a new AD is in place. Again, Pollard has made several big hires and orchestrated several big moments as an administrator there in Ames. Made the hire of football coach Matt Campbell in 2016. That program is as relevant as it has ever been right now and over the last handful of seasons. Also made a hire of T.J. Otzelberger. Otzelberger has restored Iowa State's men's basketball status as a Big 12 contender, earning NCAA tournament bids in each of the last five seasons. All the accolades, all the impact available. ESPN.com. Jamie Pollard announcing his intent to retire as late as June 30th of next year. That article up at ESPNSiouxFalls.com. Also at ESPN. .com. When we come back, Tucker Kraft is in the news. He's a top 10 NFL tight end, baby. No doubt about it. How high is Tucker Kraft on that list? We'll dive in to the tight end rankings, let you know where the Timberlake, South Dakota native, South Dakota State Jackrabbit alum ended up for now, where he could be at the season's end. The other tight ends that are making their mark in the National Football League. College football news sprinkled in as well. Coming up next on this Friday, July 10th edition of Overtime. Coming up next.
Streaming live online and with the app, this is Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Moving right along, it's hour number two on a Friday, July 10th edition of Overtime. Before the end of the show, we're going to do a deep dive into USD Coyote football with a man that has penned a very, very deep dive preview of the season ahead for USD. That's Timothy Rosario of FCS Football Central. He will be joining us here in about 10 minutes on today's show. Stick around, Yote fans and Yote haters as well. You'll want to dive deep with us into a preview for USD Coyote football. Yesterday, we got the preseason All-Big 12 football team out there, and Iowa State was left off of it this week. Your Offensive Player of the Year projected is BYU senior running back L.J. Martin. Texas Tech senior defensive lineman A.J. Holmes is your preseason Defensive Player of the Year, and your newcomer of the year is Oklahoma State redshirt sophomore quarterback Drew Mestemaker. Now, your first team or your team members, quarterback Noah Fifita from Arizona is your first team quarterback. You also got L.J. Martin at running back and other big names to know up and down that roster, but it is worth noting, might not be that surprising, not taking pot shots, but Iowa State left off entirely from this list. Cyclones have a lot of talent, but a lot of new faces in that program. A lot of turnover. People were talking about, golly, can you believe it? But Jackrabbit fans are saying, yeah, we can. When a coach leaves, generally they're going to take a lot of players that love playing for them, were promised things when playing for them, or really like the way that they're being coached. And that happens. Just like we saw when Jimmy Rogers left SDSU and there were, what, 5, 10, 15, maybe 20 guys that went to Pullman with Coach Rogers that direction. We see Coach Campbell leave Iowa State, and Penn State becomes a roster with a ton of Iowa State Cyclone transfers on it. So you don't necessarily feel bad for any new coach when they take over. Jimmy Rogers is going to build it his way. One hell of a football coach. Just might be a little bit of a sluggish start in terms of, not record, I think they'll be pretty good, but a sluggish start in terms of household names, guys that have been there, done that, getting recognized by the conference. If you feel like Rocco Becht would be in the conversation if he had stuck it out there at Iowa State. Other guys in that conversation as well. But with the turnover, new names, transfers in, transfers out, Iowa State not represented, not too surprising at Big 12 Media Days earlier this week. Perhaps the most surprising news of the week, by the way, comes in an obvious candidate for good news in the NFL. The Washington Commanders are retiring Hall of Fame running back John Riggins' number. And the most surprising thing is that how is that not already a thing? What is the hangup with John Riggins' number 44? More than 40 years after he last scored a touchdown with the team, he became the seventh player in franchise history to have his number retired. He'll be honored during Washington's game against the LA Rams in November. Riggins played for Washington from 1976 to 1985 and remains the franchise's all-time leading rusher. So this is not a tugging at the heartstrings. Riggins was one of our guys. He didn't have the stats, but darn it, he was a Redskin. He was a Commander. He was a Washington Football Club football player. He has the stats to back it up. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. One of the more memorable running backs in the 70s and 80s. What the heck is the holdup? Just feels very odd in general. And there may have been some bad blood in here. They get into it that he once declared that former team owner Dan Snyder had a, quote, dark heart, which might be accurate. But irregardless of that, you look at the resume for John Riggins, the historical significance of Riggins, the pedigree, the records that still stands. And in addition to all of that, you know what, Bert? Maybe it's because he has a popular number. No, he doesn't. Where's number 44? When's the last time you saw a number 44 on a football field? Been a while, especially in the National Football League. Fullbacks are just about extinct. Linebackers are too cool for 40s. Everybody's too cool for the 40s these days. 44, probably 44 years overdue for retirement in D.C. But again, better late than never. Lastly, from the NFL for now, really bad news, troubling news to pass along. NFL players are reportedly four times more likely than the general population to pass away due to neurodegenerative diseases such as dementia and Parkinson's. That's according to a study released on Wednesday by Mass General Brigham, Boston University, and the Concussion and CTE Foundation. The researchers studied over 19,000 athletes who played in the NFL between 1960 and 2019, including the 1,994 who have passed away, calling it the, quote, biggest retrospective cohort study to date. They found the rate of neurodegenerative death was more significant for younger players. Those who died before 60 had a 12 times higher rate of neurodegenerative death than the general population. That troubling study out, that article out at ESPN.com. And lastly here, let's talk about Tucker Kraft, the Green Bay Packers, and the tight end position in the NFL. This has been a fun little bit to carry along with the show as we make our way, inch our way, scratch and claw our way closer to football season. They're ranking up every position from the entirety of the league. And they're on tight ends today. We'll start with the others receiving votes category. The honorable mention, if you will. TJ Hockenson, Isaiah Likely, Dalton Schultz, Dallas Goedert, South Dakota native, Aronde Gadsden, Juwan Johnson, Brenton Strange, just got paid in Jacksonville, and Hunter Henry, who has carved out a very nice career after some early ups and downs. Now, the honorable mention, the guys with a little blurb about them that are outside the top 10, youngster, likely to be in the top 10 next year, Harold Fannin Jr. in Cleveland, really good player. Jake Ferguson, go Badgers. Cole Kmet with the Bears. Pat Freiermuth with the Steelers, and Dalton Kincaid in Buffalo. So yesterday, I previewed with you, I said Tucker Kraft is a top 10 tight end, no doubt about it. I think the NFL will disrespect him and put him at 8 or 9. He needs to see a little bit more, prove a little bit more statistically, health-wise, out of the injury. We'll see where he ends up. I personally think he's right there on that 5 line. Top 5 feels fair. He ended up at number 6 in the ranking, so I have no beef with that at all. Let's dive in. Number 1 tight end in the NFL. By the way, Travis Kelce nowhere close. We'll get to that in a moment. Brock Bowers, number 1, no doubter. Number two, Trey McBride of Arizona. Number three, George Kittle in San Francisco. Sam Laporta, number five, and Tyler, or Sam Laporta, number four, if I can learn to count, and Tyler Warren, number five. That's the only issue I have here. Tyler Warren's a better tight end right now than Tucker Kraft. Are we sure? You sure about that? I'm not so sure. But I really have no beef with Kraft being at six. It might just be who's there. Because to me, I still think Travis Kelce deserves to be in the top five. Tyler Warren, five. Tucker Kraft, six. Colston Loveland, another second-year tight end. Number seven. Had a really great end of the year. Kyle Pitts, number eight. He's not better than Travis Kelce. Number nine is Mark Andrews. Also not better than Travis Kelce. And Kelce ends at number 10. I'm not a Kelce lover. I'm not a Kelce hater either. But number 10 for the guy who's generationally talented, still pretty darn good, back for more this year. I still think Kelce on a down-by-down basis is really good. Kyle Pitts is a way better athlete than Travis Kelce. But I'm talking about that wiggle, the savvy, the veteran nature, knowing where to be, how to be, where to get, how to get a first down in a big spot. Travis Kelce, to me, still top five. I would probably switch him with some amalgamation of Kyle Pitts, Tyler Warren, Colston Loveland, maybe bump those guys down just a shade. I have no issues with who ended up in the top 10. Maybe just a little bit of the order as of today. Tucker Kraft feels pretty darn fair at number six. Now, that's all for the NFL. When we come back, we're diving down into the FCS world of college football. The Yotes. Go Yotes! USD. Coyote preview, football talk. Timothy Rosario has penned up a big preview on Sports Illustrated, FCS Football Central, top tier coverage of the subdivision. Timothy Rosario will join us talking about that preview, quarterback questions, new head coach, and more down in Vermilion. That conversation is right after this on a Friday.
ESPN Sioux Falls gets you back to more of overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you, set to round out and wrap up the day and the week of overtime. The women's final set for Wimbledon tomorrow morning. Men's final is official as well. 6-4, 6-4, 6-4. Sinner over Djokovic moments ago as a straight set victory in both matches today. Arthur Ferry out, Novak Djokovic out. We got Zverev and we got Jannik Sinner on Sunday morning for the men's final across the pond. Time to talk football now as we shift gears talking FCS college football, specifically the USD Coyotes. Full preview up right now on FCS Football Central on SportsIllustrated.com. The author of that lengthy preview deep dive is Timothy Rosario. He joins us right now on the ESPN hotline. Timothy, it's great to have you. Hope you're having a great day. How you doing?
Doing real well. Doing real well. Any day we can talk some football, some FCS football, that's going to be a good day for me.
Hey, certainly we are scratching and clawing and waiting and wishing for football season as we get closer. How excited are you to see this thing kick off? And in addition, talk to us about your history covering the FCS.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the season. I think we're, what are we, like 50 days now from the season starting? I think I saw that. I think it's great. It's interesting in this kind of new era of football. I think the off season becomes more and more difficult to kind of predict what we'll see. But I think that obviously then builds the anticipation for the season. So super excited to kind of finally sink our teeth into what these teams really look like. For me, so my family grew up in the Pacific Northwest. I got a lot of family from over there in Montana. My dad went to Eastern Washington. Mm. I was always a Wazoo Cougar fan growing up, but had a ton of experience to the Big Sky. And then, you know, a handful of years ago, realized like, hey, there's a lot of cool stuff here. Really started digging into it. Got to meet a ton of people, not only from out in the West over here, but over where you guys are in the Midwest. And it's been a ton of fun. Just kind of ever since then, I've picked it up and ran with it.
And certainly we're very happy that you did that because you got a big old preview for the USD Coyote football program this fall. Of course, they got some questions. New head coach, new quarterback, other playmakers stepping up, stepping into bigger roles, offense, defense, special teams. Take us through that preview, where to find it, and how fun it was to put together this year.
Yeah, you can find it over at FCS Football Central on SI. We're doing team previews for pretty much all the top teams coming into the year. We'll be doing those all the way till the season starts. So go check it out if your team's not up, because we'll get to it here soon. But this was maybe the most fun I had putting together, just because I think USD is in just such an interesting situation. A fascinating last couple of years, obviously fascinating, spring, where all of a sudden Coach Johansson's going over to Rutgers. It felt kind of like a big deal at the time, and obviously it is when you lose your head coach, but I kind of think where the program ended up, kind of a win-win situation for everybody. Love that the biggest part, obviously, of that is for the most part keeping all the players in town, but also most of the staff as well. It's really fascinating team. And I think, we were talking earlier, I think you could find yourself with a lot of split opinion where you think this team will be in the fall.
And certainly it's up for debate. New head coach Matt Vitzthum, big-time continuity promotion. He's an offensive coach. Bob Nielsen moves on. They promote the defensive coach, Johansson, into that role. He moves on to Rutgers. Now we go offense. It's going to be interesting to see what gets cooked up down in Vermilion. We talk about big returners. You have it noted in your article that there are two returning all-conference contributors, but the program didn't really have them last year. Charles Pierre Jr. at running back got dinged up early. Condre Jones-Logan, similar. So they're coming back. They're going to be the torch carriers offensively. But as far as total returners go, you got them listed as 16 significant contributors, offense and defense, coming back. How much of a boost do you think that gives the Yotes?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. One of the biggest questions is going to be quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Not only because it's the most important position in the sport, but also because when you have a guy like Aiden Bauman, who's just been there and been honestly a rock for you over these last few years, your mind's going to go to quarterback. I like this quarterback room. I don't think, I guess I'll say that I think the floor is pretty high here. I don't see you getting, any kind of like bad quarterback play out of this room, whether it ends up being Jackson Proctor, a guy who's super experienced, who I think is more of your high floor guy, or is it redshirt freshman Austin Majeski, who I think is probably who you look at as your higher ceiling guy. I think both those guys have excellent tools. I think they give you something a little different than Bauman as far as, I think we see a lot more mobility and running threat from the quarterback position this year. What I think the biggest thing that you want to avoid is, Bauman gave you, like I said, steady play, and specifically he kept you on time and didn't really turn the ball over. Mm-hmm. So as long as whoever they have in there isn't somebody who's turning the ball over a bunch, I actually think they're going to be pretty fine at the quarterback spot. My biggest question for the offense is really pass catchers and offensive line, because I think that has a better chance of kind of influencing, whether this team is more of a middling contender in the MVFC or a team that could go and win it.
And certainly that quarterback spot's going to be interesting, because you got a new head coach that was the quarterback's coach. So I think he's going to have a very well-versed, strong opinion on who the best, most capable starter will be. Some good options there, including two guys with some serious starting experience in Kremiscoli at Northern Illinois. And then, of course, Jackson Proctor elsewhere as well. So certainly it's going to be an interesting fight to the finish line in that quarterback competition with a lot of optionality. We're talking Yote football, USD Coyote football, with Timothy Rosario of FCS Football Central. He's tagged in today's show log on Twitter. And you can find the broad strokes of FCS Football Central on Twitter at @_BlueBloods, also tagged in the show log. Let's talk defense. They lost a couple big playmakers via transfer, graduation, etc. What do you think about this Yote defense as we gear up for the season about 50 days from now?
Actually, I feel pretty good about the defense. I think, overall, I think they're going to be fine. There's a lot of pieces in that secondary between returning guys and guys that they've added in, where I feel good about where they're going to be back there. Linebacker, kind of similar. I think if there's anything you'd like to see them
put together a more effective pass rush. This was one of the worst pass rush teams in the country as far as, like, if you just look at good teams last year, their pass rush just wasn't really effective. Part of that is their style. They're going to be a little bit more, you know, like, keep everything in front of us, rally and tackle kind of a group. Not a team that's going to be blitzing a ton, you know, trying to create havoc. But I think, you know, with Mike Grace gone after, you know, 2024, mm-hmm. You'd like to see them have somebody who's a little bit more of a difference maker. But frankly, I think this defense is going to be really solid. I think the floor, I keep mentioning floor, but I think the floor is going to be, you know, fairly high there. I don't know if they'll be dominant, but I think there'll be plenty good to see this team in playoff contention and even conference contention. I think, you know, obviously Johansson leaves, but you have a ton of that staff that remains. And I don't know, like, I think the defense over the last couple of years, it's been a little bit masked. I think their total numbers look really, really good. I think part of that, though, is the offense has been so effective that they're not on the field a whole lot. So I don't know if they've necessarily even had dominant defenses under Johansson. It's not like I'm worried about him being gone and like, oh no, they, you know, the bottom's going to fall out. I think they've been really solid, and I'd see them continuing to be really solid defensively.
And again, one of the big pieces of that defense, returners at linebackers, Wade Abrams, Gabriel Hardman, noted in that article, si.com/college/FCS. Timothy Rosario of FCS Football Central. Lastly, my friend, give me your take on the Yotes in terms of where they fall this year in the conference and nationally. I think most people will say they're going to be nationally significant. How significant will they be in this conference that now doesn't have the big bad Bison in it anymore? Can the Yotes win this thing? And would you consider them a top three contender to do so right now?
Yeah, so very interesting. I think this is probably the most interesting off-season topic out there. Like, mm-hmm. Hey, NDSU's gone. You know, what happens now in the NBSC? Especially, we saw so many teams, you know, look really, really good last year. And there's a ton of retention across really all six of those programs. It's interesting. You know, I listened to you and Zach talk a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. SDSU is going to get a lot of hype. Part of that is that they have the back-to-back championship not that long ago, right? I'm high on them too. I've been arguing that we should be viewing SDSU as kind of a co-national championship contender with Montana State. I love a lot of the pieces that they brought back. But here's the thing. Like, I think if you're USD, if you're, you know, not only just in the program, but just taking a look at it, like, who's been the best team in the Valley the last two seasons outside of NDSU? It's been USD. They have they're 13-3 in the Valley in the last 2 years. That's a better record than anyone else in the conference right now. Mm-hmm. So I think if I'm USD, it's like, hey, why are we all of a sudden getting passed up? It's not like the bottom fell out on a program. We didn't lose that many guys. We got a lot of guys coming back. I think the biggest question is at quarterback, and there's a lot of promising. Like, I don't see you getting bad quarterback play. I think you could even see really good quarterback play. I think if you're USD, you walk into this season going, hey, we should expect to win the Valley. And I think that potential is absolutely there. I would say, as far as in the Valley, if SDSU doesn't win it, USD or Youngstown would probably be mm-hmm. the team that I would expect there. And maybe that is upsetting to some UND folks, but we could talk about that later.
Yeah, hey, we don't like them around here anyway. That's fine with me. Timothy Rosario of FCS Football Central. Man, you can check out the article, si.com. Also, the Blue Bloods tagged on today's show log. Job well done. We'll be talking again real soon, man. Great job. Great to talk to you, and have a great weekend. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right. Timothy Rosario of FCS Football Central. Zach McKinnon earlier this week talking Jacks. That's your Yotes fill here on a Friday. And an optimistic approach. I agree. I think the Yotes are top three in the MVFC. I absolutely positively do. Now, depends on the quarterback play. Is it steady Eddie? Is it uninspiring? Is it bad? Is it just okay? We'll see. It also could be, maybe, elevated from what we saw Aiden Bauman do. But the one thing that's going to be hard to replicate is that leadership at the line of scrimmage, that steady performance, and the ability to value and take care of the football. We might see passing records fall in terms of yardage and touchdown passes at some point this year. We'll see a little bit more pocket mobility. But are you going to take care of the football like Aiden did? That is the biggest challenge to any of those three young signal callers down the road in Vermillion. That's our show. We'll talk to you Monday when the next edition of Overtime rolls back around right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.